Thank you, Conference. Can I just say that I'm very proud of every member, whether you've spoken or not, but I do think that whether we agree or disagree with the motions today, it shows the strength of this party. And I also think that it shows that we have, as well as people like me, I know that Johnny, and I want to thank you, Johnny. Johnny got the age of Progressive Unionist, or sorry, the PUP youth, raised to 30 so that I become a member. So, happy enough. Okay. I suppose my address today is a confident, outward-facing unionism. We've been actively engaged in the process of conflict transformation for nearly 20 years now. But there's still an enormous amount to do. Working-class unionist communities are struggling to find any semblance of the much-vaunted peace dividend. High unemployment, social exclusion, poor housing, and high levels of deprivation underpinned by an education system which has consistently failed working-class unionist young people and serves only to condemn future generations to the same spiral of unmet need, draining hope from working-class communities. There has to be a better way. They deserve better, and we all deserve better. Over the last, at least from December last year, you know, people have said that I've moved away from the principles in this party. That's untrue, and I hope to show some of this in my presentation. There's been no change in the party's outlook. We predicted the problems that are prominent today during the talks process and implored the governments to deal with the issues that would face our community. They refused to deal with the problems, and the problems and our policy still stand today, and we have been consistent throughout. This party's challenge is to continue to find ways to challenge the political atmosphere, to change the political atmosphere to one of inclusivity and equal citizenship, which has been at the heart of this party since its formation. As a unionist, I want some of that equality because I haven't found it yet. I stand here today not as one unionist in a million, but as a unionist among 62 million other unionists. We are members of a vibrant community of unionists. We are part of a much wider group of citizens who belong to the great nation of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. This is a proud nation that once served as the workshop to the world, which advanced medical and scientific discovery that became a beacon of democracy during some of the darkest times in our history. It is a nation that protected its democracy against fascism in two world wars, that stood toe-to-toe with the Soviet communism during the Cold War, and who confronted the Provisional IRA in their 30-year conflict of attrition here in Northern Ireland. But that was then. That is firmly in the past, to be written about and debated by historians. Are we ready for peace? However, it is not firmly in the past. We know that Republicans are constantly using the past to make gains and force concessions in present-day politics. We cannot allow our political opponents to rewrite the past. What we must do now is confront that past and put in train a socially transformation alternative. We must not point score on the past. We must protect its integrity as a warning to the present and future generations that violence is not the way to go. It is counterproductive and only marginalises working-class unionists further. Today we must build a Northern Ireland on the politics of British principles that have stood the test of time and been adopted by countries throughout the Commonwealth. We must ensure that unionism is ready to meet new challenges and, most of all, move to a new future that recognises the reality and concerns of our present position within the United Kingdom. We need the politicians to deal with issues, not horse trade, or share out the spoils of political elitism. The foundation of our new society must recognise and deal with the past and must accept the rule of law as the cornerstone of the society of equals that we all long for. The party paper, Transforming a Legacy, established important minimum conditions for engagement with any meaningful conversation about reconciliation and dealing with the legacy of the conflict. It highlighted that there is historical precedence for loyalist participation in dialogue about the need to deal with the legacy of the past in order to move on and release Northern Ireland from the fearful society that it has endured. We should also note, however, that the unionist preoccupation with loss and contributed to this fear, and in the process has significantly hindered the possibility of unionist communities developing the confidence necessary to meet the challenges of a post-conflict Northern Ireland. We believe that unionism and loyalism should address this confidence. We believe that loyalism and unionism should address this confidence deficit, since it is a major obstruction to playing a positive, forward-looking role in society. Serious self-examination is therefore necessary about the stifling impact of fear, and indeed, whether it is fear of loss, or more contentiously, the loss of fear, which is preventing progressive, radical and creative thinking in unionism. Liam's Bradley report talks of moral symmetry in dealing with the past. This is very important, since any process of reconciliation cannot be seen as merely an extension of the power struggles which existed throughout the conflict. A genuine process of reconciliation should not be preoccupied with point scoring, but should be about coming to terms with what conflict did and is continuing to do to lives in Northern Ireland. It should be a social and not a political process. The major difficulty with designing any process that all sectors are comfortable with, we have already seen how difficult the task will be to the reaction of the Eames Bradley report. In fairness, Eames Bradley consulted widely, and outcomes should perhaps have been given more consideration. As leader of this party, I believe in the members and their commitment to find a way of creating a fair and equitable society for all. The party recognises the problems that this society faces, and we recognise as a unionist party we owe our lineage and existence to grassroots sentiment. We also understand the frustration. Indeed, we feel it. We owe it to all the people of Northern Ireland to move forward, confident, assured and ready for peace. The best way we can honour the dead is to make politics work for everyone. That includes those who find themselves out of sorts with this new Northern Ireland. Vision. My vision is a simple one. As a unionist in a vibrant partnership of 62 million other unionists, I demand fair treatment from the political class. I am a citizen of a state in which my political loyalty is expressed through the role of a parliament, democratically elected, and with various regional bodies, the Scottish Parliament, the Welsh Assembly, and our Assembly here in Stormont, that is supposed to give expression to local concerns and opinions. But I find myself feeling that our opinions are not being heard. They are masked by the language of a peace process that is not delivered for our people. Sinn Féin's grassroots strategy today is to divide and conquer, to separate Ulster loyalism from wider British unionism. The vilification of the Orange Order this summer and the aftermath of the flag decision, when unionists were asked for leadership and loyalists were given the blame, offers a glimpse into their agenda. It is our belief in the wider unionist community that Sinn Féin are being duplicitous, and that their current strategy undermines the overarching spirit of the Belfast Agreement that they widely lament. For you, this is frustrating, because for my early work as a politician to build up institutions that should be delivering for you, since last summer I have been warning of the hollowing out of unionism in Northern Ireland. We have seen its debritification. In other words, we are witnessing the designs of a Republican machine that spent over three decades trying to coerce unionists, loyalists and modern nationalists in the unethically exclusive political project of a 32-county Irish Republic. They failed, but yet they still try to force us to accept their vision for the future. Well, I say that we are not to be coerced. We do not accept this blinkered vision for us. It was not persuasive when they used the gun and the bomb. It is still unconvincing today. Our party's stand was made clearly 15 years ago at conference when the late Billy Mitchell outlined the dangers to us of Sinn Féin's disculturisation that we now call debritification. He warned of the dangers of the Protestant working class, stating that we were being written into the American notion of poor white trash. He warned of the ridicule being heaped on the Protestant working class, the war being waged on our culture, as well as loyalism being criminalised at the same time Republicanism was being politicised. Yes, conference, Billy Mitchell raised the issue 15 years ago. What has changed? Absolutely nothing. Personally speaking, I believe that Sinn Féin's preoccupation with flags and emblems has more to do with wanting to remove any visible sign of their failure to break a link with Britain than it has to do with Republican ideals. Having lost the constitutional battle, they have resorted to agitating for the removal of symbols. They remind them of the failure. British symbols are a stark reminder that after a sustained campaign to break the Union, Northern Ireland remains British, and that it is hard for nationalists to stomach. The removal of those symbols, certainly public buildings, may help alleviate the pain of failure, but it is nothing for nationalists to be jubilant about, or for unions to be despondent about. I fully appreciate that for many unionists, the issues of symbols is very important. I believe that every effort should be made to resist Sinn Féin's programme of disculturalisation, but at the end of the day, the substance of my British citizenship is more valuable than the symbols. My British identity is rooted and grounded in something more substantial and enduring than symbols. It is not something that can be plucked from my heart as a plaque is torn from a wall or a flag from a flagpole. In spite of Sinn Féin's outward show of euphoria and the despondency that this is generating within certain unionist circles, I remain a confident unionist. What is to be done? Our vision for Northern Ireland is built around four core principles, as mapped out in the Principles of Loyalism. In the paraphrasing of my friend, the late Billy Mitchell, a loyalism that is based on the core principles of the Solemn League and Covenant has more to offer people of Ulster than violence. These principles, briefly stated, are 1. The material well-being of Ulster, 2. Civil and religious freedom, 3. Equal citizenship within the UK, 4. Use of unarmed resistance. Let me take each of these in turn. The material well-being of Ulster. Every member of society has a right to better themselves and their families. Northern Ireland has the lowest growth rate of any region in the UK. We must do better. The attempts of OFM-DFM to bring inward investment to the province is failing. Despite the scenes of Peter and Martin ringing the bell on the New York Stock Exchange, no progress has been made to transform Northern Ireland's economic base. I say, this is not good enough. Our people have not seen a peace dividend after all the years of conflict. We need to ensure that not only jobs come from America or other countries, we need to focus on how injecting hope into the construction industry by arguing for a cut in VAT throughout the United Kingdom. We need to grow our own companies by helping them financially and give them access to new markets and growth techniques. We also need to ensure that education is geared to the workplace and to encourage our students to think about work and their role and skills needed to succeed and prepare them to enter the marketplace. We need to adequately fund research and development and ensure we have proper training for jobs that come to Northern Ireland. This argument is consistent with this party over 20 years. Civil and religious liberty. The dispute over flying of the Union flag, the blocking of the Orange Order parades from passing any so-called Republican areas, and the attacks on Orange Halls and church halls are all endangering our civil and religious freedom. As a party, we are for the protection of our culture. We will not accept any attempt to cow us into submission or of an overweening and deeply ethnically exclusion Gaelic culture. No matter how harmless it appears to middle-class unionists in the Alliance Party, we have always espoused this as being important, and again we argue people are entitled to protest on parade. We have also supported that right to make us protest even when it was against us. I just want to recall, I suppose, something that I remember that happened just before the agreement was signed in 1998. Myself and David Irvine and a party colleague walked down to the gate because we heard there were protests going on, and we had a group of people who were protesting against the political way forward inside. And we had a group of people who were actually supporting it by standing with candles. The police started to move the anti-people and wanted them moved. David Irvine and myself approached them and says, "What are you doing?" you need to move to both groups or leave both groups where they are. We were being vilified, being called traitors. They were totally against us, but we stood there and told the police that they had a right to be heard, irrespective of whether it was against us or not. That's what we mean whenever we talk about, you know, people have freedom of speech. They should be entitled to protest, irrespective of if it's against us or not. And this party will always stand for that and allow people to protest against us. I think at the very reason we support the Orange Order's right to parade and support the protest at Woodville is because we've always been our belief that civil and religious freedom is important. We must deal with the deep-rooted sectarianism that exists in all parts of our society, irrespective of religion or class. It is destructive. We need to challenge it. We need to cut it out of our society by recognising cultures, religions and political identities can exist side by side. Equality, citizenship within the UK. As I've repeatedly said, I'm a unionist in a vibrant community of some 62 million. I'm a British citizen who happens to live in a part of the United Kingdom that is deeply divided between those who see themselves as British and others who see themselves as Northern Irish or Irish. In a poll commissioned by the Belfast Telegraph, only 3.8% of respondents wanted to see United Ireland anytime soon. The largest proportion of people said they would still vote to stay within the United Kingdom. But the status quo isn't good enough. We must work hard to persuade the remaining doubters of the merits of maintaining the link with Great Britain. We must point out the rights and freedoms they enjoy in a largely secular society, which guarantees tolerance, fair play and democracy. As members of the wider unionist family, we must hold the British government to account. They are the ones with the power to make lasting executive decisions on our behalf, not the local assembly. We defend their right. We defend people's right to speak, even though it was vicious and totally against this party. That is the corner of British citizenship. Unarmed resistance. We've been criticised of late in supporting peaceful protests. We've been accused of fermenting trouble via the flag protests. I say that we are the only party showing leadership at this time. Our campaign of unarmed resistance has been carefully mapped out over a decade ago in the Principles of Loyalism. It is not new. For those who are not familiar with the term used in the Principles, unarmed resistance may involve selective picketing, peaceful protest, public demonstrations, and even acts of civil disobedience. Who would believe that? We need to go on the offensive politically, socially and culturally. That's exactly what unarmed resistance means. This may seem like a lot for the political establishment to stomach, but it is necessary to defend our way of life. It is necessary to ensure we campaign actively on the issues that affect our communities. While we do not advocate violence, we know that to fight a political war takes guts and determination. I have said in the past that politics is war without bloodshed, and that politics is war by another means. Join us in our political project and confirm that loyalism has a political strategy. It is time for change. Your time is now to help us build a better future for our children's children. You will never do a more nobler act than to allow this and the future generations to make decisions free from a society that created conflict and one that has closed the chapter on the past. Martin Luther King was perhaps the best known unarmed resistor. He described an unarmed resistor as being someone who is passive or non-aggressive in the sense that he is not physically aggressive towards his opponent. But his mind and emotion are always active, constantly seeking to persuade the opponent that he is mistaken. What I am saying here and now to Sinn Féin is, you are mistaken. Your tactics have done great harm to the people of Northern Ireland, and they have failed. You have not secured the kind of stability that our people believed they would get when they voted in favour of the Belfast Agreement. I was a participant in negotiations leading up to the agreement, and I am telling you that you moved away from the spirit and the letter of that agreement. And you have done so for your own selfish reasons. You have put yourselves and your party before your country. Your hunger for power has left the rest of us politically malnourished. But because there is no way of registering that, no opposition in the local assembly, we feel ourselves without a voice. Well, I say no more. Sharing responsibility. We will use support and trust of our people that have placed in us to rescue the political disaster unionism finds itself in because of Sinn Féin's lack of cooperation, to work in the reality of Northern Ireland being a part of the United Kingdom. We will galvanise further support and win over the doubters with our arguments. And we will do so through a process of sharing responsibility. Incidentally, this is a PUP policy that dates back to the formation of this party in 1979 and which was formalised in a 1985 document of the same name. While I recognise that the political context has changed, I do not feel that it has changed for the better. We must challenge our political opponents to do better, and if they do not, then we must go toe-to-toe with them in the political arena. We must lobby support across the UK on a platform that is based on a confident, outward-facing unionism that is unafraid to wear its loyalty as a badge of honour. And so the PUP will outline its policies on how that context can be changed for the benefit of everyone, but particularly amongst the most marginalised and disaffected communities in Northern Ireland. As leader of the PUP, it is my privilege to carry the torch of this ambition for a confident pluralist unionism forward into the future and to put our country before party. Conference, what I ask of you, I ask you that you support the vision that this party works to give leadership and political representation that working class unionists are looking for. It is your duty to represent our community in all areas and issues, to ensure that we rid this society of political fear, to be clear that no person has anything to fear from political loyalism. Be magnanimous towards those who have a different political aspiration, which is currently unattainable, and try to dispel the perception that unionism is equated with negativity. Follow the example of Great Britain and create a more pluralist society here in which normal class politics will hopefully emerge. Do not consider expressions of Irishness to be a threat. Consider them more to be understood and differentiate them from republicanism. Also convince them they have nothing to fear from our politics or our British identity. I want you, conference, to provide us with an effective party machine that will build us a political mandate that in turn will give us the opportunity to change the political landscape. The hard work begins now. Each and every member of this party has a role to play, and we need to ensure that we move forward with a single vision that incorporates our four principles of loyalism. We are a region of the United Kingdom, and I ask you to inspire and work for a pluralist Northern Ireland that is inclusive. To achieve this, we need to explain our position and argue our brand of unionism demands a right to be heard. The responsibility of party members is to politicise working class communities by empowering them and creating social responsibility and helping them to become confident unionists as you are yourselves. I hope our journey will be a fruitful one and we have positive experiences along the way, and we are looking for partners to guide our people to the Northern Ireland that we all yearn for. This is not a journey we can or want to take alone. We need others to help us create a new frontier. Thank you, conference, for your attention. And I leave this place and begin the work which will achieve a society in which loyalists and unionists have an equal and rightful place. Thank you very much.